Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm speaking with Ed Dolan, CEO of Epic Results. Over his career, Ed has helped more than 2,000 entrepreneurs start and grow their businesses, providing training and consulting that drive breakthrough performance in sales, profit, and customer satisfaction. Ed is deeply involved in supporting business communities. He's a board member and past chairman of the Somerset Business Partnership, and he was recently honored with the 2025 Somerset County Business Partnership Legacy Award for his lasting contributions to the region's economic growth. What makes Ed's perspective especially valuable to our conversation today is his work with family-governed businesses, where the line between family dynamics and business strategy can get blurry, and where longtime legacy often takes center stage. Ed, welcome to Growing Up B2B. So great to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Ed. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Hey, let's start with your journey, Ed. What led you to found Epic Results and focus on helping entrepreneurs and other family business-led companies achieve breakthrough performance?
In retrospect, thinking about it, I would say my entire career was leading to it, but it was actually the actual impetus was 9/11. Okay. I was running a tech company at that time. Like many places, we sent everybody home. I went home. It was a time of reflection, if you will. And thinking about it, I realized I had been brought in as a CEO about 3 years earlier, had achieved the goals that we set at that time of becoming profitable and turning the action of the business around. Started thinking about what's next. And I had really a couple criteria in mind. Number one was that as many people were thinking at that time, I wanted to do something to contribute to the greater good. I was too old to join the Marines, like my future son-in-law was talking about, but I wanted to do something. The second part was that I realized I'd grown up watching Bugs Bunny cartoons, so my threshold to boredom is about 3 minutes. So whatever I did had to serve that. And my career trajectory, as I said, had been from very large corporations to smaller and smaller businesses, family-owned businesses. I'd been working with family-owned businesses for about a dozen years and thought I had a pretty good idea of what goes on. And for me, it was the realization that many of them are very good at what they do and have, at the same time, very limited business experience. And for me, that was the point of entry, that I could contribute something there. And so my thumbnail description was sort of CEO by the hour. And of course, my son was looking at colleges. My daughter was in a private school. My wife was effectively a stay-at-home mom. She said, "Are you crazy?" But we did it. And that's where it started.
Wow. And it's very interesting that you brought up 9/11 as a point of inflection. I was actually just, I've been to the monuments several times.
Uh-huh.
But over the weekend, it was the first time that I actually went through the museum.
Oh, and, no kidding.
My goodness, did it bring back all the emotions and memories of that day? And
yeah,
you're most certainly right. It was a moment of reflection for all of us, for me too, as we really started to rethink what's important. I would say COVID, would you say, was that similar?
Oh, COVID changed the world for sure.
Yeah. So across your career and your run, you've helped more than 2,000 business leaders. So when you look at that and when you look at the body of work that you've done, what would you say is different about family-led businesses versus those that are not governed by family?
Very clearly, drama. Think about who are you more likely to snap at emotionally, a spouse or a colleague? When you bring family into it, it complicates everything for sure. You end up many times putting up with performance that you wouldn't or shouldn't in another environment. I worked with a client, the business was owned by two brothers. And if you've I don't know if you have a brother. I have two brothers, but one of them
Hey.
is like my Irish twin, 15 months younger. And all we ever did was fight. I can remember being in the supermarket and we were on the floor fist fighting. My mother skimmed right through the checkout line because all the crowd was gathered around us. But these guys were the same way, even though they were like 50 plus years old. They fought about everything, argued over everything. And they had their desks sitting facing each other so that if
Perfect.
one picked up the phone, the other could contradict everything that he said. It's just nuts. But yeah, the emotion and the drama, it complicates things extensively. On the good side, it can be a comfortable, happy extension of family life. And I've seen businesses that are wonderful in that regard, where the patriarch or the founder still comes to work occasionally, can mentor the next generation. It just can be a very comfortable environment if done well.
Absolutely. And in my own experience, I've seen both sides of it. I think when my dad and I did overlap, we used to lock horns a lot. But when we didn't and we were aligned, we were a pretty powerful team. And then with my sister there too, it was the trifecta. We were like unstoppable. But when we hit those certain impasses where we didn't see eye to eye, it wasn't pretty. And I'm sure you can appreciate not just for, we're the family members, we're just doing what feels normal.
Sure.
You've got staff and people that are non-family that have to bear witness to this drama. And that's not always a very healthy thing in the
Nope.
organization. If anything, it's rather toxic, I would think.
Absolutely.
When it comes to that family leader, putting the drama aside, what are some of the, I'll just say the blind spots? What are some things that they're missing? Again, you come in with a lot of corporate experience and expertise. They're running a business. They may or may not have that body of knowledge. Where are the blind spots that you see most commonly in the family business?
Sure. As Vito Corleone said to Sonny, never tell anyone outside the family what you're thinking. And you just hit on it when you talked about your family. It's the impact on everybody else around you that you don't see. It reinforces that insularity. Employees, in the worst cases, employees are treated like serfs and just do whatever I say. And that's not healthy for a business, and it's not effective for a business.
So when you see those types of issues unfolding, so as you referenced the two brothers that, basically would lock horn, how do you, as the advisor, help to mitigate some of that? Because we all experience it coming out of family businesses. It's there.
Sure.
And so obviously we don't want it to because it's not healthy and it's not good. So how do you work through some of those things when you see that?
Yeah. I used to say wear a vertically striped shirt and carry a whistle because you really were a referee. But in a more business fashion, I would say the antidote really lies in structure. It lies in having a sense of purpose, lies in having a set of values that you hold each other accountable to, and then putting some structure in terms of an organization chart and eventually a board of some type. As Simon Sinek said, every business knows what they do. Very few of them know why they do it. And that purpose becomes incredibly powerful. It's what engages employees. It's what motivates people. Daniel Pink wrote about motivation, said it comes internally from having autonomy, being able to develop mastery, and to have a sense of purpose. Companies that have and are true to a purpose, I see they have a significantly different level of performance from their employees because of that. And by the way, people stay longer. People stay when they feel like they're part of something.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Again, drama and other aspects of the family governed business can show up and certainly complicate a lot of things. It's accountability. And a lot of times you go into a family led business and it looks like the org chart just replicates like the family tree.
Right.
So you're the oldest son or daughter, so therefore you're the number two, and your siblings are younger, and your cousins, I don't know what they're gonna do, but they're obviously down. So how do you help a business, a family run business, where there are multiple family members involved, separate the roles and responsibilities so it's just not like a carbon copy of their family tree, if you will?
Sure. It's most small businesses I find really don't have any kind of organizational structure. You wear a lot of hats, everybody does everything, but that impedes you from growing. It impedes you from expanding and scaling the business. And so in every business, there always is somebody who is the lead at various functions. There's somebody that takes the lead on sales. There's someone that takes the lead on administration and accounting and HR. There's someone that takes the lead on managing the troops, if there are any troops. The key is to start to identify those people and build an org chart. It's not cast in stone, it's not carved in concrete, it's on paper. Write it down and share it with everybody and bless those who have those roles and coach them and manage them to develop those roles and change it as time goes on, things are going to change. So have an org chart and manage to it. Meaning, if you're the leader of the company, if you're the owner, don't go around the people that you've put in place as managers. Go through them, involve them, and train them because they need to be trained.
That's some great advice relative to that, or just your involvement in working with the family governed business. You may have a number of them that I don't know, but what's one of the hardest truths you had to deliver to a family business leader? Something that they just didn't want. You don't have to name names or anything, but just something that they didn't want to hear, but you felt, hey, they need to hear this for the business.
So one of the hardest was there was a person I was working with was the second generation. And in that business, the father, who was the founder, was older, but he was still there every day. He was still running in the same way we talked about every detail of the business. And it eventually became very clear, and what I had to tell this second generation, who had, by the way, been in the business for 15, 20 years, built it significantly, was a significant contributor. I had to tell that person, go someplace else. It's not going to work. He's never going to let go.
That's pretty heavy. But you know what? It was probably the right thing based on the circumstance, because I'm bringing it back to my scenario. It was probably about 5, 6 years, 5 years in or so. And I had the heart to heart with my dad. I said, Dad, I love you, but one of us needs to go do something else. And we had started the buyout process. It was a 10-year buyout. And I said, listen, if you want to keep doing this, that's cool. I'm going to go do something else. But if you really want to finish what we started, then you've got to step away. And it wasn't to be mean. It wasn't because I wanted to like kick my dad out. It's because I didn't want to be one of those guys that just discovered for the first time at the age of 55 or 60 if I could run this damn business or not. I wanted to know in my 20s if I could do it or not, so that when I got to my 50s, I was really good at it. Hopefully. But that was a hard conversation.
I'll bet.
And he grudgingly elected to step down fully. He was like semi-retired. And the most amazing thing happened. Our relationship flourished and he became a great advisor. And honestly, he got to do all the things that he shelved and wanted to do, but never said, oh, the business is the
That's
priority.
great.
So then he had this amazing run where he was doing all these cool things, and it was almost like business, but just you get your check. So okay, whatever.
Yeah, and now you are jealous.
I was like, it was cool. So I was happy that we did what we did. But yeah, it was a hard one, and it sounds like yours was equally hard. And I'm sure that CEO didn't take too kindly to
Yeah,
that.
what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Everything ended up for the better.
That's
He
good.
ended
That's
up in
good.
a much better place.
And when we lead with truth, and we lead when we have the hard conversations, when we're truthful and they're the right thing to do, typically things do end out for the better. Another thing that I've seen a lot, and I saw it a lot when I came here to Dilley Associates, it's that, gosh, we've always done it that way mentality. We've always done it this way. Why would we do it any other way? So when you see that, I had a great advisor once who told me, I said, I've always been doing something this way. So then you've been just doing it wrong for the last 3 years. Now it's time to change. So, ouch, but okay. So when you see that, when you see a company that's stuck in a pattern, how do you break through and show them that there might be another way, or give them some alternative point of view?
It's very pervasive. There's no question about it. It's not unique to families. It's any business, especially, look, if the business has had any success, why monkey with success? It's always the mentality. Just keep doing it. But the antidote, I think, is that there's a very famous management consultant, Peter Drucker, who said, "My greatest strength as a consultant is to be ignorant and ask a few questions." And my 3-year-old grandson knew this instinctively. If you tell him to do something, he's going to say why, and he's going to ask over and over again, why, Why? Question everything is the antidote. Question it and ask why repeatedly. Get to the crux of it. Maybe it is the right thing to do. But on the other hand, maybe it's like that fella told you, you've been doing it wrong for 20 years. Who knows? But let's find out. Let's explore it.
So once you bring that to them, does it take a while for a company to embrace the
It's all over the map. Some people are very stubborn, very reluctant to do that. Others embrace the idea that it's worth picking up the Rubik's Cube and turning it around a few times and seeing what the heck it looks like.
So another, and this comes up sometimes and sometimes it doesn't, but when it comes to leadership, some families, they have a very clear succession where it's maybe there's a parental figure and a son or daughter, and they're literally being groomed to be the next in line. But sometimes there isn't a next in line, or that next in line either doesn't want it or may not have the skills and abilities to do it, right? To lead. So in your opinion, Ed, and based on what you've seen and experienced, when should a family business bring in that outside leader? And when should they say double down on, all right, we're going to stick with the family bench because we got some good players. So how do you work through that? Talk about that.
It's a great conundrum for lots of businesses. I think let me take leader out of it for a second and say that my knee-jerk reaction is, when should you bring in outsiders? Always, immediately. Every business can benefit from not being totally insular. Every business can benefit from gathering ideas from many directions. You look at the investor environment where venture capitalists and private equity firms always bring in an outsider, always put people on the board, always have outside guidance and advice. And I think every company can benefit from that. Now, in terms of the leader, it can be great, it can be horrible. I've seen complete disasters where a firm brought in someone from outside, maybe not as CEO, but as chief operating officer, to run the business. And the tendency is to look to people who've got that kind of experience. The numbers point to the fact that what you're going to find is someone that's coming out of a large corporation and maybe is semi-retired or took an early plan. And it's culture shock. They really don't click in a small family-owned business. You also have to separate ownership from leadership. That second, whatever generation can clearly retain ownership without necessarily retaining leadership. And if they're wise, they may find that there's smarter leaders. If they're real wise, like your dad, ultimately, they find there's other things that they enjoy doing. So I think you start in small steps, I believe. It's like often when people, small businesses, family businesses, are looking to hire, what I recommend to them is that they contract with someone to do a specific project. The mentality of, if I hire this person, it's going to cost me $130,000. No, it's not. It's going to cost you $20,000 to do that project. And if it doesn't work, so be it. If it does work, you know you've got something worth keeping, and it's an investment. And by the way, there's a benefit to the person that you're hiring. If they don't work out, they don't have to put that they got canned on their resume. That they can put on their resume, I completed this project for XYZ company. And so it's benefit all around. Bring in consultants. There are clients that I work with that have three, four, five consultants that they turn to regularly. One company has a consultant who is, in effect, their CFO. They have another consultant who is their chief marketing officer. Good consultants, it's not self-serving, and it's also not something for a consultant to be afraid of. I think a good consultant, one of the commandments is, don't dabble and babble. Stay in your lane. Provide the thing that you're good at, and let someone else provide other stuff at the same level of expertise. So I think a company can bring in outsiders without necessarily destroying the chain of command and without disrupting ownership, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely true. And I've seen, just as you have, I've seen it work really well, and I've seen it go very badly. It would seem, to your point, though, that when it goes well, both parties are walking in with their eyes wide open. For instance, that person that's, and I know a scenario just like that, where it was an outside CEO was brought in as the next generation didn't wish to have operating responsibility. But that person just didn't come in and say, all right, I'm going to jam everything I learned from corporate down your throat. I
Right.
said, I've learned some things. I have some skills. This is a different environment. We spent the first 6 months really understanding the environment and making very minor changes, very minor.
Yep.
And once he got more buy-in and more respect and knew the team and they knew him, then he started to turn the dial more and turn the dial. But it was in a way that the business was ready, you know, as opposed to ripping off the Band-Aid or throwing you in
Sure.
a pool of cold water. It's a shock to the system, and, which never seems to go very well. But when there is a succession in place, when there is that next generation who at least demonstrates the desire to be the number one, what mistakes do you see sometimes when that handoff is happening, when the first generation is looking to pass the baton to the next, and that next is looking to receive said baton? Where do you see families struggle?
I'll give you three that I see as big issues. Number one is really the number one is ego on the part of the first generation. It's reluctance to leave. Nobody can do it as well as I can. I'll put you in charge, but I'm going to tell you what to do. I'll work the puppet strings. I think that's a disaster waiting to happen. The second is on the other side is naivety on the part of the next generation. It's look, you wanted to find out could you do it at 20 rather than 50. That's very valid, but you did have some you had some backup in terms of your father. I think that the child that's chomping at the bit and say I can do it, I think you do need to think that through a bit and prove that you can do it in some way, shape, or form before you go grabbing at the reins. And the third, I think, is just blind nepotism. You put someone who has no skills and no leadership ability, you put them in the role because they're in line for it.
Great points all around. And as I look back, there was a pinnacle moment as we were working through the buyout, and there was a meeting between my father, myself, and at the time, our accountant. And my accountant was basically saying to my dad, "Why are you still here?" And my father's re response was, "I'm afraid he's going to fail." And my accountant at the time said three very impactful words: "Let him fail. Let him fail." In other words, let him fail.
Yeah.
I've seen him. I've seen what he could do. If he's going to fail, he's not going to run the ship aground. He's going to make a mistake, probably going to
Right.
learn something very valuable at the back end of it. And that's a damn hard thing to do. And you
Yep.
really got to take that parental figure hat off to let that happen, you know?
Yes, you do.
And that's hard. And that's why outside consultants are so helpful, because they
Yep.
can navigate those conversations
Yeah.
that otherwise just couldn't be had in the right way. So,
It's like a father teaching his kid to ride a bicycle. At some point, you have to take off the training wheels and let go of the seat. And he's either going to fall or he's not, but he's not going to learn with you standing next to him.
So you've spoken before about something you've referred to as breakthrough performance. So
Okay.
something that you're looking to achieve in the companies you work with. So when you think about that, what does that mean exactly? What does that look like when you, whether it be working with a family business or any other organization, when you hit that breakthrough performance level, what does that look like?
Sure. One of the common things, this is a generalization or a composite of clients that I've worked with. What I often find is that the person who started the business is 20 years down the road or longer, is still the lead salesperson, still the lead technical person. It's all issues and questions come to him or her. The org, as large corporations like to brag about having a flat org chart. This is an org chart that has no lines whatsoever. It's everything points to the owner. And the fact of the matter is the person is consumed, especially when you're 20 years down the road, absolutely consumed with the business. As Michael Gerber wrote in the E-Myth, you're working in the business, not on it. And how do you get out of that, get unstuck from that? And so if I those clients that I've worked with, the breakthrough is that, and this doesn't happen overnight, doesn't happen in a month, but sometimes a couple of years, sometimes a little longer. But they get to the point where they become a true owner slash CEO, maybe even an owner slash chairman, and someone else is the CEO. They get to the point where they're taking multiple several week vacations every year. They're going to a lot of conferences and understanding the industry. They're establishing strategy and direction for the business. They have managers who are doing the day-to-day management on their own. How do you get there? You have to start as you said earlier, giving up. Let them fail. You have to start, when all of the questions are coming to you, you have to start asking, what would you do? Okay, go do it. Letting go is critical, but then seeing the bigger picture, being comfortable with not being in the day-to-day. It's probably the hardest part for people like I'm describing. What I find is they find it really difficult to give up. That's why they're still there 20 years down the road. So we work on purpose and creating the culture of the organization, get some structure to it, coach the managers to be good managers. And like I said, it doesn't happen instantly. It takes a while.
Yeah. Building off that point, because this is something I've seen play out where I know a few businesses where there is the owner, the founder, sometimes it's even in one case, second gen, has
yep.
taken that CEO or chairperson role and brought in a president, essentially, who is the
okay.
operating leader of the
yep.
organization. And what I've observed, and you may have seen this too, is there's this oscillation between the chairman or CEO steps in, right, to deal with something and then steps away and feels like they stepped away too much and they jump back in
yeah.
and they jump away and they jump back in. So you've got this kind of yo-yo effect or whip effect. It's almost in their out. They're in their out. So how do you help that leader who does want to stay? Because in their heart of hearts, they want to step away.
Yep.
And they just feel like they can't. How do you help them find that kind of balance by what's enough governance from this new position and what's too much? So how do you help them define the lines of what's okay and not okay?
I think there's several things that go into it, Ed. I've advised people in that position several times, particularly at this time of year, to go home and rake the leaves. Just get out of here. Don't be here. Do something. But it needs a little bit more than that, admittedly. That's a glib reaction to it. But what it needs is, again, its structure. If they have agreement with that president as to what the company's purpose and values are, and they can see that he or she is acting on those and using those as management tools, if they have objectives or responsibilities for that president, and those are measurable, they can see what's happening, then you can let go. But you need to put the structure in place in order to be able to, it's the Reagan trust but verify.
Yeah. I often think that I even question it myself, if I could do it.
Sure.
And I know the tools and I know the exercises. It's like the old island. If you're on the island, right?
Yep.
And your company's afar, what data do you need from the island to make sure that everything is going okay? Yeah, that makes sense in theory, but in practice, I question myself. I'd be able
it's
to
hard.
Let go and without some help. You raised some great points there. I wanted to touch on something else because it seems to be pervasive to every single guest on the show and every industry, which is the rise of AI and digital tools. To what extent are you seeing that show up in the clients that you're working with, whether they be family governed business or others? And to what extent are you encouraging the adoption in the organizations that you're working with, especially those that are, hey, we've always done it this way, they're rooted in
sure.
tradition. There might be some trepidation or fear of, hey, we're all going to lose our jobs because AI is going to take all of our work away. So how do you address some of those issues?
So I was watching the news this morning and I saw, didn't really see it. I just heard there was an advertisement and the headline was silver is at a 10-year high. And the strategy theory was that's going to prompt people to want to buy silver. That's what they were peddling. But I've heard and read guidance from like Warren Buffett for a million years that says, don't follow the crowd. Sell when everyone else is buying. Buy when everyone else is selling. Yet here they are advertising. It's at a 10-year high. Buy. And how does that possibly work? The way it works is that as human beings, we have a herd mentality. We don't necessarily act on rational behavior. We follow the crowd. What I would say to businesses is, look, AI is no different than silver at a 10-year high. It's the current hot technology. It's everybody's talking about it. Everybody's advertising it. There was a interview on the news I saw recently, and they were talking about there's a school in New York and several other cities called Alpha School that's built on AI.
Mm-hmm.
So they were talking about as a contrived example. Let's say you have a kid who's disengaged in learning, but he's real interested in basketball and Marvel Comics. The AI will create materials for to engage that kid. My wife was standing nearby and heard this, and she's worked in public schools, elementary schools for 20 plus years in a variety of capacities in different schools. And she said, "That's what a librarian does." She's absolutely right. It's the old adage of a solution looking for a problem. Anybody that's peddling something is going to peddle a solution that's looking for a problem. I would say to the business owners, don't get caught up in the hype. Stay in your lane. Focus on your business. If you have business needs, if you have things that could be automated or simplified, talk to someone in that field, someone who's expert. They'll know if AI can help or not. If you're not a software development company specializing in developing AI, don't do it. Do what you're good at. Do your business.
That's great and very pragmatic advice. I appreciate that. So I mentioned this when we first introducing you on the show. You were recently honored with the Somerset County Business Partnership Legacy Award. Now, for listeners that don't know, Somerset County Business Partnership is one of the premier business organizations in our great Garden State. Very high level of participation, high level of activity in the regional scene. That's a big deal. Talk about that for a minute. Were you surprised? And what did that recognition mean for you personally and professionally?
As I said to Chris Edwards, the CEO of the partnership, when he presented it to me, said, "I think you just called me old, but it was very polite the way you did it." It's had many smaller business, new businesses especially, will join an organization like the partnership, chambers of commerce, what have you, expecting to find new clients. And what I tell people all the time is you'll most likely be disappointed. The partnership or a chamber of commerce, those are organizations that are looking to contribute to the greater good. They're looking to develop the economy of the area. It's the high tide floats all boats concept. So if what you're doing is if you're looking to make a contribution, to be part of it, to make a difference, you'll be successful. I joined the partnership probably 15 years ago and have been on the board for maybe 10 of those years. And my purpose was never to find more clients. My purpose was that I believed in the concept of improving the business community, the social community. I've met wonderful people and made great relationships. On the other hand, if you are a small business, you need to build your customer base. There are organizations that are focused, like BNI and the TIP, that are focused on members helping each other get more customers. Join one of those. Join them both. But so for me, it was the opportunity to make a contribution, to make a difference, and it was acknowledgement of that, which is always good.
Awesome, awesome. A question that comes up, and I'm going to slant it a little differently, but I do want to hear what you had to say. So let's just imagine that a young consultant or somebody that wanted to consult for business came to you and said,
Sure.
"Hey, Ed, I want to work with family-governed businesses. That's who I want to focus on." What would you tell them? You
Yeah.
said, "Are you crazy? Run." But
Yeah.
seriously, like if somebody came and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about this is focusing my
Yeah.
practice here on the family governed business," how would you guide them and say, "Hey, this is what it takes?"
Yeah. So when my son went to college, he said he wanted to major in finance. And so I asked him why. Because my thought process was that at that point in time, many people were doing that, and they were doing it because they saw the dollar signs at the end of the rainbow. And I wanted to make sure that wasn't his sole purpose. I told him, if you want to make a fortune, go work with Vito Corleone in the olive oil shop in Brooklyn, and you'll get there a lot faster. So I love that question, why? Why do you want to do that? And also to the young consultant, what do you have to offer? I think that the motivation and the contribution, what you can deliver, those are the significant parts. And in terms of advice, I would say, as I said earlier, stay in your lane. If you have expertise and can make a difference, great. But be genuine and care. Do it because you're doing it because you're trying to help those organizations, trying to help those businesses.
Nice. In fact, it brings back a memory of a why question from I have a very successful older brother. He actually exited his business for a very large sum of money. But years ago, and I was maybe like halfway through the buyout, and I was having a bad day, and I'm just like, I'm talking to him, and I said, I don't know what I'm doing here. Why did I buy this business? This business is crazy. It's making me crazy. And so he said, "Why did you come into dad's business? Why did you start this buyout process?" And I said, at the time, I was just pissed off. So I'm like, to make money, of course. And then you know what he said to me? He goes, "You were stupid. He said, if you wanted to make money, you sure as heck shouldn't have gotten to marketing. You should have gotten to finance or banking or money is." So he said, "Maybe you did it because you love it, because you're good at it, and because you think that perhaps you could take the business somewhere that dad couldn't." And that kind of brought me back to reality. But that all started from a very big why question many years ago. So there's a lot to be said for asking questions, Ed, for sure. Last question for you, my friend.
Sure.
If there's a family business leader that's listening in today that wanted to learn more about the work you're doing as part of Epic Results, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Call me, text me, email me. My cell is 908-209-0972. So text me or call me or find me at EDOLAN at epicresultsllc.com.
Awesome. Awesome. But thank you so much for joining us today on Growing Up B2B. I really appreciate your candor, your wisdom, and your insights into the challenges and opportunities that come with advising, especially the family-governed business. Again, we've been speaking with Ed Dolan, CEO of Epic Results, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Ed, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ed. It's been fun. Great questions.
Thanks. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.